I've got a lot of good feedback. So I was like, whew.
Yeah.
All right.
No, it was good.
So part of that editorial, and I've asked this of someone else, I'm going to ask you the same thing. What were your thoughts? I assume you heard the quote, maybe you didn't, of a board member saying, I don't know what the protests are about.
When I heard that, the first thing that popped in my head was gaslighting. Like, I don't know what this is about. Like, pretending he doesn't understand why we're pissed. Well, even if you're not a complete idiot and you can do any amount of deductive reasoning, okay, we kick out Scott. People get mad on internet. We get less money. How hard is that to figure out? It's a pretty short math equation. I don't think it was that. I think it was, I don't think it was being obtuse or uninformed. I think it was just an attempt to deflect what's going on. It was a tough question. A great interview question, honestly, as someone who's interviewed a lot of people, like it was a great question. Like, I don't remember if his question directly led to it or if it was just something he said in the midst of answering something else, but I don't recall exactly, but it I don't know what they're about. It's about you kicking out or duly elected. Like, we've had four area directors in the last 3 years. Four. What's going on? You know?
Right.
Because we keep electing people they don't like. That's what's going on. You know, Sherwin became the president without ever having a vote cast for him, by the way, which is the only thing I don't like about being unopposed. I would prefer to have been voted for. That is the one thing I don't like about this scenario where I may end up being the area director is I don't like that I'm unopposed. Like, I get what Luke was doing. And I can't help it if nobody else runs, but it was sort of a criticism of mine that Sherwin managed to become president of the organization without ever having a vote cast for him. And I didn't know that until I heard him say that on Brian's Hunters HD podcast, that he was nominated to take over when somebody moved out of the area, and then he just kept running unopposed and never was run against. Because, well, I like Sherwin. He shows up to my match. Why would I run against him? He must be doing a good job, you know? And, like, a lot of times, you know the refs did a good job at a football game when you don't talk about the refs afterwards.
Right.
But sometimes it means they're not doing their job.
Correct.
You know? And so I would prefer to have been voted for. But as far as, like, what is this about, that's just... It was just a dumb thing to say. Like, how can you not know what they're about, what it's about? I don't understand.
I don't either. I mean, I have my own personal thoughts, but that we can talk about that off.
I don't know Russell. I don't know anything about him. I just know it was, if he truly doesn't know, then he needs to pay more attention.
I'd say if he truly doesn't know, then there's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
So in your mind, what is the number one most pressing topic for the USPSA? So let's assume that tomorrow morning you find out that magically they got word back from the law firm. Scott is not going to be the Area 3 director. You are. What in your mind is the number one most important subject that you feel needs to be fixed, or whatever word you want to use?
It's hard to say number one, but spending needs to get put under control. Spending's out of control. We're spending more than we're taking in. That's not how I run my household, my wife and I. I mean, it's not complicated. If you're making less than you're spending, either income needs to go up or spending needs to come down. The easiest thing to do is spending comes down. Income is down right now because of previous decisions on spending and many other things. Right. And so to me, the spending is the number one issue. There are other things, you know, a lot of the protesting in Area 3, myself included, was it's 100% primarily about Scott being removed. Now, if there's an opinion that is not from Attorney Jim about, you know, what the law is in Delaware, and when I heard Ben reading the law and read it, now it doesn't, and then there was a Delaware Supreme Court decision based around that. I don't remember the particulars, but boy, it sure read like this. It wasn't legal the way this was handled, or that this bylaw is not even legal, you know? Sometimes there's other case law you're not aware of though, you know, and what the threshold is for something. It's something my family's had to deal with here recently, finding out that, you know, the law isn't exactly what you think it is. And because there's other things that play into it that you're not aware of, you know, case law primarily. And, so, you know, that's what it's about here. So like part of the problem with the protests is, okay, if it comes back that no, when it comes to nonprofits, this is a thing that doesn't apply. So technically the bylaw is legal. All right. It sucks, but, when does the protesting end? Okay. To me, it was pretty simple. The protesting ends when either Scott is reinstated or there is a clear fixing of what is broken in USPSA, when things are actually changing for the better, one or the other. And the irony of this is I could end up being a board member and a protester at the same time. this is a reality, right, that could be coming true here very shortly. And wow, that's a stark dichotomy. I said this to someone earlier today that messaged me. I am, God, how did I say it? Now I remember. I'm not a politician. I realize I'm getting into a political position and I'm not someone who would play well in politics, you know, the art of the deal or what, you know, trying to come to consensus on things. That's not something I'm equipped to deal with. I'm not a politician at all. I'm 100% a USPSA activist. That's how I'm approaching the board position. I'm not, I've been very, very publicly critical of the board over the last 2+ months. I've said some kind of crazy things on our podcast and I don't regret any of them. And I realize I'm going to end up working with these people or some of them, because half of them have quit now. But at the same time though, I don't regret saying any of those things. Could it lead to an awkward moment? Sure. Okay. But like, I really care about this sport and it needs to get fixed. And these people I'm talking about on my podcast are the ones who are breaking it. And that needs to end. And I don't really care if I'm hurting feelings when it comes to fixing USPSA. I'm not seeking to be mean. You know, I don't wish to hurt feelings intentionally, like be rude about anything, but right. I care way more about fixing this. I shouldn't say fixing the sport. The sport is fine. The org is completely screwed. I care about fixing the org so that the sport can remain great. And right now there's lots of issues and they need to get resolved.
So I think you're like most people, the number one issue is the finances of the organization. That's got to get a handle on that.
And just what we're spending money on. You know, we have this magazine. I'm aware generally of what publishing something like that costs. It's not cheap.
Right.
Is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, I don't know what those numbers are. So,
right.
you know, if but we're,
do you feel that as a board member, should all the board members be privy to that information?
Well, yeah, of course.
Okay.
You know, there's nothing, once you're a board member, like, this is not a government. This isn't like the CIA has secrets the president doesn't have access to because of right. sources and methods. This is a game run by administrators, and it's a pretty cool game. And there's nothing that secret. There's nothing that needs to be secret.
Agreed.
If we're talking about legal conduct, there's nothing that needs to be kept secret. There's no reason for it. What would there be? That's the thing that, like, I can't wrap my head around. What is the big secret? Maybe there is a big secret. Maybe there is not a big secret. Maybe it's wanting to hide everything because we always hide everything. It could be that too. But it could be something else. I have no idea what that is. But as my co-host Jeff said, he was there when Sherwin drove off with that pallet of ammo in his truck after Wisconsin section. So I don't know.
That's a lot of ammo.
Yeah. I don't know what the big secret is. That would be my number one question for anyone on the board. What is the big secret? Why is everything such a secret? I don't understand. The finances are secret because it says in the bylaws they're secret. Okay. Well, let's change that. Let's make them public. And there's nothing in the bylaws that says an area director can't have access to financial information. You know,
right.
Do they need to go and dig up a bank statement from October of 1997? Well, I don't know what they'd be looking for that, you know. But I mean, if there's a reason for it, there's no reason they shouldn't. You know, if it exists, I mean, it may not. That's really old. But whatever it is, there's no reason why, especially when it comes to finances. I don't know anything about, you know, like, I know how to run my household finances, but like, my brother-in-law has an MBA in finance and he does things with Excel I don't understand. And he told his boss to fire him because you don't need me. And he gave him a giant severance and he went and found a different job. So I don't understand that kind of finance, but I do understand that to understand the trend of where your company is financially, it requires historical data. And to not give the guy who is best equipped to deal with that on the board and not allow him access to that data, the only question I can think of is why?
I couldn't think of a logical reason to not give that individual or any other individual who's going to be doing that access.
And even if it was, even if it was in the bylaws, it wouldn't be logical. Even if it said only the managing director and the president have access to that information, well, that would not make sense. That should easily be part of a presentation given. Like, the, you know, if there's an issue in some part of the business that the managing director finds, and then they, okay, here are some options, you know, or here's this problem, we bring it to the board and then talk about, okay, what would be potential options? Okay. Well, is that going to cost us a bunch of money, or is this going to be a smart investment, or whatever? Like, that's like, to me, that's where the board comes in. You know, we should be taking care of the big picture stuff. The president and the managing director take care of the smaller day-to-day things. And as long as they're congruent with what the board direction is for those things. And yeah, there's logic and board meetings are not words that collide in the same sentence a whole lot, unless it's preceded by illogical. It's just, honestly, I said this to Eamon last summer. It feels like the USPSA board is like a small town gun club board. It really feels that way. It's a bunch of guys who are on there and they're just like, well, I like my thing. That's this. And that's how it is. And that's how, well, why do we do that? Well, 'cause we've always done it. Well, let's keep doing it then. Like that's how it seems it's been run for the last, I don't know how long.
Yeah. And which baffles me because I look at the organization and I look at where I live or where I work, and you have a board of county supervisors, 7 to 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a county executive who you're paying money to run your organization.
They're doing the work.
They do the daily work. They keep everybody on track. And that's what they do. And if there's anything they need to take you know what? We want to change our logo. They go to the board. The county executive goes to the board and says, look, we want to change the county logo. And here are some options that we're looking at. Here's the cost. This is why, blah, blah, blah. And then the board makes that decision. But that's when you go to the board to get their approval for stuff. Everything else is day to day. This is where we're headed. Here's your budget. You keep trucking. And it's just a report back. That's it.
I mentioned this earlier, it probably should just be defined in the bylaws. Like what literally, I don't know if it needs to be defined in the bylaws, but there should at least be a policy of like, what is the board going to worry about? You know, what can be done by the employees and what needs board approval, you know? Something like a logo change, yeah, that should probably be board, you know, that's a big picture thing. If it's a secondary logo, like the logo they have on the live for the meeting, you know, or it's got USPSA and live, like if it's a supplementary logo, like we don't need to approve that. Like it looks cool. That's fine. You know, we don't need to, like, not everything has to be a board vote, you know?
And I should correct myself. County seal, not county logo. County seal. Yeah.
But
county seal. That's what I was thinking. I said logo, but no, I agree with you. Any of that other little stuff. Yeah.
Like if, like there's a, I'm trying to think of it. Like if the United Way is going to change their logo, like their board should probably be involved with that. You know, that's not something their managing director or CEO is going to do. And you know, as far as being like a, you know, the, how the, it's kind of tough to find, you know, it's tough to find employees, period, right now, you know, in many, many businesses. Like unemployment in my state is incredibly low. You know, if you want to work, you can. There's no, it's not hard to find employment in this state. But if we're looking for like the absolute, you know, best and brightest, okay, they're probably not going to go to work for a small nonprofit sporting organization. You know, that's something I've seen a lot online is we should be getting the best, you know, we should get someone who's been a CEO. What CEO wants to be a managing director of USPSA? Like, seems like a giant step down unless they happen to be a USPSA shooter and they're really passionate about it, you know? And even then, like, that guy should probably be a board member or the president, you know? But, you know, there's a million issues. And, you know, it's one thing like during the campaign, when I thought there was going to be a campaign and, you know, like I was going to go on other podcasts and, you know, have a debate or whatever, like, what are we going to debate? Like, finances or FUBAR, you know, we got to fix those.
Luke ruined your fun.
You sure should. But I mean, it would have been a whole bunch of like agreeing with each other. It would have been the dumbest debate ever. Right. It would have been completely ridiculous.
You know, like, I don't even know who to vote for. They're the same person.
Like, who do we vote for? You know, but I'm not going to pretend to have all the answers. You know, that was something I realized I was going to have to come up with was like sort of a platform, if you will. Of like, here's what I'm running on. But like all of us would be basically running on the same thing. Like, let's pull the org's collective head out of its butt is what we want to do. Like that's, everybody's pretty much on the same page there. And how we get that done though would be the debate, you know?
Yes,
there are, I agree. The way of solving the problem may be different. And that's where, you know, I'm not going to budge on the things that need fixing at all. How we go about fixing those things, I'm very open to how to do that, because I don't necessarily, the only thing I know we need to do is spend less or make more or both. But how we go about doing that, like what gets cut, I don't know. Like there's a million different ways that could be done, and a lot of them would be good. Some of them might not be, but how that ends up happening, I guess we'll see. But
all right, so a couple more things have come to mind since we've been chatting, and then I'll let you go. I've kept you for a while.
Oh, I could talk all night, Dave.
I could too. That's my problem.
4-hour episodes of my other podcast.
Dude, like Jarrett Heinrich and I, 4 hours, yeah. And we could have kept going, but his wife's like, "Hey, are you going to finish or what?" Yeah.
Well, mine had to stop because we were getting too drunk. That's why we had to stop.
Oh. I feel like we probably could have had a potty break and kept going for another 4 hours.
Yeah.
But you, with your background, do you just as a member, I'm not saying as a board member, you're going to go in and say, we're going to do this type of media and that, but sitting on the outside, just as a member, are there any things that you have noticed? You're like, oh, the USPSA could do more of this or more of that or less of this and more of that from a media or.
As far as just overall marketing, the marketing outside of like the marketing right now is for people who already shoot USPSA.
Correct.
Really? It's not for people who are not part of the sport. It's for people who, I mean, it's sort of worded that way, but I've seen Facebook ad or Instagram ads show up in my feed. I'm already a member.
Right.
Like that's wasted on me, you know, finding ways of reaching people. And I'm not saying that's not a relevant thing, because I'm sure like they're keying in on like people who are shooting or they're outdoors or, you know, which I also probably have those things in, you know, in my secret file with Meta or whatever. But how to go about reaching people that are not already part of our sport. Like to me, shooting USPS or shooting USA, I don't think spending money with them is useful. I think getting a younger, cheaper content creator to do stuff that is, I mean, there's been some stuff done, like the stuff Josh Frelick's company's done is really cool. Yeah. Like it's great, yeah. But it's just sort of flash.
Correct.
It's cool. It's a bunch of cool B-roll video and it's cool. And it looks way better than anything else that they've done, but it doesn't, it's like they went from one end of the spectrum all the way to the other. Somewhere in the middle, I think would be better. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be using that. I think the old, well, here we are shooting USA. We're at the low cap nationals and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know how many people are watching that show anymore. You know, like people don't have cable TV. Like I don't have cable TV anymore. I haven't seen an episode of Shooting USA in years because I don't have the outdoor channel anymore. Lots of people are that way. It's and the people I do know who have it, it's like my mom still got cable and she's got outdoor channel, but she's not watching it. I mean, if my dad was still alive, he would watch it, but like he's not shooting USPSA, you know. I just think it could be, that money could be spent better elsewhere. I don't have the magic bullet for the marketing. I just know it needs to be different. It needs to be more current. So, YouTube, Rumble, maybe.
Twitter, maybe.
I mean, Twitter would be good just because it's going to be freer. You know, you're not going to get as restricted, but at the same time.
Well, like Rumble too. Yeah.
It's same with Rumble. Yeah. But continuing to just have content, you know, like I've heard many other people say the same thing. Like, why do we need a review of a gun in the magazine when you could have someone shooting the gun and actually on video talking about it in the context of shooting USPSA. You know, right. It would, that those sorts of things would definitely be better. Getting out of traditional media is like the magazine and television. I don't think either one of those two things is really viable for our sport if we're going to truly worry about growing. But here's the other thing though, too, is like a lot of people are really wound up about, you know, we need to get Under Armour and Coke and Pepsi and we're going to do all this. And it's like, look, we're a drop in the bucket in the shooting sports. We really are. There's just shy of 40,000 USPSA members. And what was the number you said that are active? But, like 20?
Like it's like 20, 19 or 20.
Okay. Yeah. There's like 5 million trap shooters in the US.
Right.
You know, even if all of a sudden mainstream media didn't hate guns, they're going to trap shooting first. It's a bigger bucket to spend their money on, you know,
right.
There's that too. I would prefer USPSA spend its money on making our nationals great. Let the media kind of take care of itself, you know, like make it something cool that influencers want to cover, you know, that, you know, and is that possible or not? I don't know, but that's how it works with like actual major sports. Like it's pay to play in a lot of those cases, you know, like the sport is getting paid to have that access. I don't know if that's viable. It's probably not, you know, it's not like USPSA is going to become the NFL or anything like that. But I just care about I really care about the sport. I don't care about making it into the Olympics. I don't. It's not going to make USPSA better. Yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be great. I'm not saying it wouldn't be, but I don't care about spending time, money, and energy in that pursuit. There are bigger problems we need to fix. And if all those problems are fixed, then down the road, like, hey, let's try attracting some mainstream sponsors. But we have trouble having sponsors that we should have now. So let's fix that before we worry about getting Under Armour or Coke or Pepsi on board.
Now, you had mentioned, we had talked briefly about nationals, and that seems to be where a lot of the hemorrhaging occurs. What are your thoughts on like an end of the year single nationals where all divisions are up for grabs, maybe like a 4-day nationals with a day where you don't shoot? So you get an extra day worth of squads. So you get a lot more people at the match. You fill the match one time, have a nice, say like Tuesday to Friday. And then Friday you have a ceremony and then everybody can head out.
I like it being at the end of the year. Shooting nationals in May or June when you live where you're in the frozen tundra for half the year, it's kind of rude. We don't get to practice outside and live fire.
Right.
You could. And I can get frostbite too, Dave.
You sure can.
We're just making sure someone from California or Arizona is winning that championship. That's what we're doing. as far as the I've talked about this before too. Tyler Turner posted something I completely agreed with a few weeks ago, and it was he wrote something like, hot take, nationals does not have to turn a profit. And that is a hot take considering that it's the biggest loser of money right now. Once the org is financially stable, it doesn't have to make money as long as the org is not losing money.
Correct.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, as long as you're still in the black overall,
right.
You're fine. Yeah. I agree.
So whatever it costs to put on. Does that mean we should have 5-6 nationals that the org is paying for and that's covering above what the match fee pays? Probably not. Like, we're not there. But if if we can, then that's fine. As far as right, that's not feasible right now, though. Like, that's not a thing right now. So everybody's pissed about USPSA is losing money, losing money, losing money. They raise the match fee. Everybody's pissed about raising the match fee. So do you want financial responsibility, or do you want to keep shooting the match at the same cost it has been?
Right.
When people got really mad about that, like, I get that the Nationals aren't as cool as they used to be. But I couldn't speak to that. I don't know what they were like. When I went to Alabama in 2021, I was a little underwhelmed, you know. It wasn't, I kind of expected more of a spectacle, honestly, a little bit, but at the same time, you know, and mostly within like the sponsors and, you know, like the vendor area, I thought would have had more in it. You know, it was pretty much Beretta, GX, and one other that I remember.
Andy, I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been to Camp Perry for the national matches?
No.
That is, I've been there a few times as a kid too. Huge gathering of all the rifle shooters from across the country coming to shoot service rifle, you know, high power matches. And you had every vendor you could imagine. As a teenager, I would go to some of the vendors and pay a couple bucks to shoot a match grade pellet gun,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a little shooting booth type of a thing. But this is where I'm going with the single nationals. It becomes an event. And with the day off,
yeah.
maybe you attract the vendors. Maybe they do come and like, oh, because now you're in Talladega. You're there for 4 days. One day you're not shooting. Where are you going on your day off?
You're getting
maybe
drunk.
You actually.
That's all there is to do there. That's all you're doing. You're
going if to you can find bar. A place that's open.
You're going to that sports bar with the good pizza and you're getting wasted. That's what's happening.
But I've been to three nationals. I have never walked into a vendor booth. Not one single time.
No, I did walk up to the Beretta booth when I was down there, and that was about it. The complication comes from USPSA is a weird sport. Like, I mean, I've only ever shot like small high power matches. So how those work, I mean, they'll have like 24 lines, right? You know, positions on the firing line. So, right. And it like to actually shoot the course of fire does not take long. Like you're done in about how long?
Typically 20 minutes or less.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, are you talking about the whole match or no, just a single like string of fire?
Yeah. No, like you, like your run in the four things.
I'm not sure I'm following you. I'm sorry.
Well, like okay, I the matches
the
I
matches
ever
all
were,
day.
Okay, but like you're not shooting all day, like you.
I am
personally.
Not. So here
how
here
long
would be
does
an
your
across
shooting
the course.
Take place?
I've got 22 minutes. With a 3 minute, so 25 minutes at the 200 yard line, followed by a 5 minute one. So 30 minutes at the 200 yard line. And then I'm only at the 300 yard line for 5 minutes as a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the 600, now I'm there for 25 minutes. So was that 60 minutes of shooting?
Okay. Does that all happen at the same time or is there a schedule and you're kind of bouncing around?
It's a schedule and you move from yard line to yard line and then you switch and go and pull targets and stuff. So that's why it's an all day thing.
Okay. So does that sport have the ability to run more people through in a day than say a USPSA match on 20 bays?
Well, it depends. It's like any other range. It depends on how many target points they have. Like if you go to Perry, there's literally 150 target points. And you could have six people on each one. So that's what, 900 people shooting?
Okay. So, yeah, they can handle a lot more.
Right. But you get closer to that number with USPSA if you have a four-day match and you only shoot three because now you have a whole extra day of people. You know what I mean? Some
quick math. Yeah. Let's like, but it's like 240 people at a given time can be on the range at like a 20 stage or 20 bay nationals. If it's 12,
right.
Know, there's that limitation. And then on top of that, it's roughly 40 minutes per bay that you're there, give or take. And the math of match directing is like, it's like my number one concern for how the match goes. And it's really complicated when you have just one match, because, and this was something Tyler had said in my exchange with him, is he didn't want nationals to lose the everyman aspect. You bring it down to one nationals. Now you've got, so 4 days worth of shooters, like how many people could that handle? You know, are we capping it at 500? Can it be, and like, I'm thinking out loud here, so I have no idea what any of these numbers would be. It would be tough to get it to a number, and think about the popularity of carry optics. You know, most people are wanting to go shoot that. And if they can't, you know, does that mean you limit the number of slots in a division? How do you do that? Does everybody just sign up? Cause then you still got like 8 revolver shooters. What's the point? You know,
right.
You know, or if you get a bunch of revolver shooters that are taking, you know, they get in before some of the heat and carry optics are open, you know, like, and these are not reasons to not do it. I'm just talking about the concerns of the one match, you know. I'm okay with the concept of one match, but how do we go about it, you know?
Right.
And still maintain the everyman aspect of USPSA. It's one of the great things about the sport. There's a lot of people who think nationals should only be for the elite. You know, like you qualify to make it, and that would be cool. I don't think that's a bad thing. But the only way that would work in any reasonable financial way, and I think it would be really cool to do, don't get me wrong, is to, you'd only have like a handful of squads and a handful of squads of staff. You know, you wouldn't have staff for every stage of the match. You would have staff for as many squads as you have for that competition. And then they manage the stages as those squads are going through. That's the only way I can think of that would make that work, to actually make it exclusive, you know, whether it's, you know, how many you have for carry optics, how many of the, you know, if you're going to qualify for nationals, how many should that be? 30, 40, 50? You know, I think 50 is a really cool number, you know. 50 best, figure out some way of qualifying those 50 people. Okay, there's that one. We have, like, we're not going to get enough revolver shooters to do revolver this way.
No, but not.
You know, but like for the carry optics, limited optics, you know, maybe you reduce the number of people in a division given on by participation. I don't know. But that top whatever percent, there you have that. That's who gets to be there. And then there's those, you know, but if there's 50 people, that you're already looking at like 5 squads, pretty much, just shy of 6 squad, or yeah, 5 squads. Now it's starting to make less financial sense, because you're trying to get people to, you're trying to make this work financially. They're paying match fees and trying to limit the number of staff to run it. That's where it gets tricky. And
right.
Having staff work the match. I had an exchange with a guy online a few weeks ago, and he was from out east somewhere. I can't remember where. I think I want to say upstate New York. And like, he'd worked at Area 7, and they didn't pay money to the staff. Like, they got a dinner, they got a shirt, they shot the match for free, and that was pretty much it. Like, they didn't get anything for it. I worked Area 3 last year, and I got, I think it was $200 or $300 for working it, to help offset hotel and meals and gas and whatnot. And it's, that was the first time I worked Area 3, but that was the first time Scott ran it. And I know they take care of anybody that needs taken care of in Iowa, but like at the Iowa section, they have so many locals to help them. They don't have to shell out a lot. And it seemed like the guy I was talking to from New York was sort of in that same situation. Like, they didn't need to cover travel costs because everybody was from there. You know, they didn't have to deal with that. At my match, the Great Plains section, I hand everybody a $100 bill for work on the match day. That's what we do. And nobody's really working the match to get paid. This is just like the thank you for putting in the time and coming up and working the match and whatnot. And, to me, I don't work matches for the money. I work matches because it reduces my cost and, I like doing it, you know, but to do it for nationals, like, it's hard to get a bunch of locals there to cover everything and to make it cheaper. You know, like, I don't think everybody should get paid the same for working nationals, but if you have to travel to get there, then you should get reimbursed for that, you know, and that's where it gets really expensive. It's not an easy problem to solve.
Right. Well, and I know the Virginia State match, cause I've worked that a couple of times as the medic there. But I'm local. I'm literally 20
medic?
Minutes.
I don't have a medic. I should get a medic.
You should.
Apparently. Yeah. I mean, there's a hospital right across the highway from us, but I never,
somebody's got to drag him there. I didn't get anything for doing that, but I mean, I know that, like, what they do is they take their staff and let's say there's 30 people coming to work the match that are from out of town. Then they get 15 rooms, put two people in each room, and they don't pay the,
but they pay staff the doesn't they pay. Provide the hotel for the staff.
Correct. If you want your own room, then you pay for half of the room. They pay for half. Now you have, mm-hmm, quote unquote, a private room.
But
type,
like, are they actually providing it, or is it like reimbursement?
Oh no, they like, the ones
they
that
rent
I saw
the hotel rooms out.
Correct.
Okay.
And then they assign, you're like, you're in room 215 with Joe Snuffy.
So-and-so. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So, you know, awkward. They can, it can be, but typically they like, hey, me and my buddy are coming to work, so we'd like to be in the room together. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Done deal.
Sure.
That type of thing. And then they don't give out prizes to the shooters. Everything they get for when they do the staff dinner, it gets passed out to all the staff. So you might win a Mark VII reloading setup or, you know, whatever. But that's how they give all that stuff to the staff and take care of their rooms. And you get Southern BBQ food while you're working the match.
And honestly, like, the thing I like the least about running a major match is the prize table. I loathe it. I don't care about prize tables personally. I don't go to matches for them. It's just sort of this part of the sport that the one thing I do like about it is it gets people to stick around to help tear down. You know, that's the thing I like the best about it. Cause the first time I had any prizes, we didn't have a lot. We just had a little bit and I bought some, this is 2022. I think it was primers. I mean, primers are still expensive, but I bought.
Are you asking a question at the end of there? 2022.
I couldn't remember if it was the first or the second year we had it, but I bought some primers. And this is when they were like, you were shelling out like $100 for a brick. And
okay.
And those went quickly and people stuck around for those. And I think we had some Hunter's HD Gold certificates. We didn't have a ton, but we had some stuff. And and so the thing I noticed was, well, when we had no prize table, almost no one stuck around for awards and everybody bailed right away. And I ended up mailing out 16 plaques. The next year I mailed out 3 and they were all people from Arizona that shot staff day. So, it was
so nils.
Like there's, he didn't shoot. He didn't come up. Actually a guy I went to high school with and then a bunch of his friends, one of which was actually from this small town of Canton. She grew up there and came and shot the match. And, with that crew from the Phoenix area last year, it was pretty cool. There was a guy that also graduated high school in that same town and he lived in Florida and he was like, he's looking at the calendar for matches and he's like, Canton, South Dakota? What? Like, I graduated high school there. is this real? There's a level two USPSA match there. And so then he came back home. His folks still live there. And yeah, it was pretty cool too.
But so yeah, I was looking. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I have this bad habit of filling dead air as a former radio jock.
Oh, that's okay. I am forwarding something to you. Oh, wait, shoot. I created a whole spreadsheet on a 1 week nationals. Like how many shooters you would have, what your, I just sent it to you. You don't have to look at it now, but I actually laid it all out. Like what the expenses would be, how many shooters you would have, all of that type of thing. And I could be way off, but it lays it out like how it would work or how it could work. It might need to be tweaked, I'm sure, but because I am not a match director. However, I was looking for that while you were talking and I thought I had it in my Google Docs and I kept scrolling, made it to the end and I never saw it. So it's something you can look at later.
And that's, you know, I'm not opposed to really any idea. It's just a matter of execution and how about doing it? Like, I got it now. So like 600 paid shooters, $500 a piece. Right.
And there, yeah, but there's what is it like? I also deducted how many unpaid shooters, like, sponsored shooters and
yeah,
stuff.
Right.
I tried to guesstimate like, that stuff.
So you do have a pretty big number of 720 shooters.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
But I have more. I'm also using, I'm finding a range that has more bays. I think it might be 24. I don't remember.
Hey, I know of a range that'll be open in a year that'll have that.
I think, yeah, I've heard that there's a nice one going up not far from you, right?
No, out in Rapid City. I was just there last weekend. I drove out. So we were staying. My daughter's gymnastics meet was at this event center that is attached to a bunch of hotels that are also attached to a big indoor water park. And 7 miles north on the street that is on is where the new South Dakota shooting complex is in the process of being built. There's a bunch of bays already plowed. They're doing all kinds of dirt work out there right now. Like it's kind of a mess right now. Like imagine a bunch of giant machines.
Right.
Yeah. It's a bunch of dirt moving machines. But there's a bunch of the bays that are built and they're huge. Like there's two halves of it. Like there's a public side and then there's like the competition training side. And so like the front side, there's going to be, God, I can't remember how many there's going to be, like counting all of the, like every single one of the ranges there will be built like a bay, but some of them are like 300 yards long.
Okay.
And some of them are 25, 50 yards deep or whatever. And pretty much everything in between. Most of the like tactical competition bays in the, on the backside are going to be on the shorter side and the stuff in the front would be longer. But I'm not directly involved with that project, but I have a friend out there who's a match director at his local club there. He's been heavily involved. And it's like the thing that's the coolest about it is from what he's been told so far. And I believe it because it's pretty much how they run the state runs their ranges. They don't want money. Like a big event could happen and they're not concerned with getting paid. It's part of it is like, it's an attraction to the state. It's the,
okay,
you know, it's going to bring a bunch of money into Rapid City. If there's this giant match there and you're 7 miles from a buttload of hotels,
that's literally 10 minutes away.
It was such a short little drive straight north. It's close to Deadwood and Sturgis, although you would not want this match going on during Sturgis because every hotel would be $500.
Right.
That would be a bad thing. But
and there's that drinking thing again.
Yeah. but it would be in such a cool location. Now, the big concern, though, is staff. Like the club out there has like 30 people at a match at their monthly matches. And like they don't have the staff to staff a Nationals, obviously, but most clubs
right.
are not local clubs staff. Like Talladega isn't the local club staffing that match either.
Nope.
So
everybody's coming in.
Yeah. And I mean, Rapid City doesn't have an international airport, but it has a regional airport that flies in and out of Denver, flies in and out of Minneapolis. I don't know where all that you can get direct flights from there too, but a number of places, I'm guessing similar to Sioux Falls. We've got a number of places like you can get in there by plane and it won't be stupid expensive. Yeah, it'd be more than flying to Atlanta to go to Talladega, but then you're not getting a rental car to drive 2 hours or 2.5 hours or whatever it is right. to get there. Like you're literally 15 minutes from the range. So finding a rental car might be tough if there's that many people coming in that weekend, but but it's I mean it's a tourist destination. That's the thing that's so cool. Like of all the places where there have been Nationals, the only one I've ever wanted to go to when there wasn't a match going on was St. George. Every other place there's ever been a match going on, I don't care to go to. I'm not bringing my family there. You can go shoot in the morning at this place and then bring your family and then go to Mount Rushmore.
That would
in
be
the
cool.
afternoon. It would be 35 minutes away, you know, Deadwood, like the TV show Deadwood, it's, you know, like that town is out in the Black Hills. It's probably about 45 minutes from there.
So there's actually things to do.
There's stuff to do. I mean, the Black Hills themselves are just really cool to go tool around in. And Pahasapa, the Lakota name for the Black Hills. Crazy Horse, you can go visit Crazy Horse, the mountain that's in the process of being carved. There's caves, there's gambling, there's a buttload of cool restaurants. Like the downtown in Rapid has gotten really revamped. Now, it's not, I'm not trying to say Rapid City South Beach. I'm not trying to say that, but we haven't been doing matches in Miami either. So, at least to my knowledge, it would be really cool. And obviously I'm biased because it's my state, it's my backyard, but it'd still be a 5-hour drive for me. So,
wow.
I mean, it's 80 miles an hour all the way across the state, but it's still, I got to drive all the way across the state to get there. But yeah, it's going to be an amazing facility when they get it done. I think they're hoping to be open the front end open by like July of this year. So it's in the process, but it's going to be cool. They've got like a 1200 yard rifle range. That's going to be there. Some sporting clay, whole bunch of stuff. It's going to be really cool. I wish it was a little closer to me. That's the only thing I'm sad about, but it would be an amazing place to have a Nationals at. And I keep telling, like, I've been the match director of the Great Plains section for the last 3 years, now doing the fourth year. The guy who's the match director at the club out there, I was like, dude, you need to come work my match this year, because in another year or two, you're going to be hosting a major. Whether it's the section, like, because I've never wanted to keep the section at my club forever and ever. Like, it's not my match, it's the section's match. It should move around to the clubs that want it. And if he's got a fit, like, the place they shoot at now is not capable of having it, but this place definitely would be. And, like, it should be out there. I would love to go shoot a match out there and work the match out there, you know. I can't wait till it's done. It's going to be amazing.
Sounds pretty wild. Sounds like the Cameo of South Dakota.
Pretty much. Yeah. Sounds like Cameo has a few more bells and whistles that this one would not, like all the TVs and whatnot in the bays. Like they're not, this is a purely government project with some donations. They ended up raising a lot of money. That's one thing about the Game Fish and Parks Department in South Dakota is who's building this. It's on their, it's land that they own. And I think this is true of most states. They are 100% self-sustaining. Like they don't get any funding from tax dollars. Like it's all licenses and park fees and camping fees and whatnot.
And the 4 million pheasants being shot every
year. 4 million pheasants. Yeah. There's a lot of non-resident licenses getting sold during pheasant season. And that's what they make their money on. And which is why it's kind of wild when they have a number of public ranges around the state that are similar to this, just not as big. I mean, not even close. They're much smaller. Like they'll have a few you know, like a 300 yard rifle range and then 100 and a 50 and a couple of pistol ranges, you know, something like that. But they're open to the public all the time. You know, it's there's no fences up, there's no gates, there's no nothing. And yes, stuff does get broken and abused from time to time.
Of course.
Because people are stupid at gun ranges. It's just kind of how it is. But yeah, it's I'm very excited about, and whether or not it's going to be totally free, like if they're closing down a public shooting facility for a whole like week, like, okay, maybe there should be something given back. But at the same time, if the state's okay with like, hey, we just want you to bring a bunch of people here and spend a bunch of money in the state, because that will come back to us too. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the taxes from all the stuff you spend will go right back into the coffers.
It'll come back in.
Well, you guys also have a very gun friendly governor though, too.
Oh yeah. So. And just gun friendly state in general. It has advanced under Kristi Noem for sure. She's
been very vocal about it. Like I live on the East Coast and I know of her and what she supports.
Well, when you're trying to get the VP nomination, that tends to happen.
It helps,
you know.
Okay.
She got pretty famous during COVID, and then she started injecting things in her face and kind of looks a little strange now, but she's very polarizing even here. Anybody who's even remotely left of center absolutely hates her, which is amusing to me, because it's like she could save a baby from a fire and she's like, yeah, but she was a bitch about it. You know, like that's the attitude some people have. But at the same time, like we didn't close anything during COVID. Like God nothing, nothing closed here. We didn't deal with any of that. And when she's out there talking in every other state that she's in, when she's not here, which is frequently, she's kind of touting that. And there's been a number of gun things though that have been good. One that I think it came from her was getting rid of all the fees for pistol permits. We don't pay for pistol permits or background checks. Used to be with like the permit class I teach, to get that enhanced permit, you would have to take a class, which that's not free because they didn't set aside money for me to teach the class, but
right.
But you don't pay money at the sheriff's office to apply for your permit, and you don't have to pay for the fingerprint background check anymore that they would send off to the Capitol to have processed. So, like got rid of all that stuff. Our gun laws are already pretty friendly. Some of the carry laws I would like mild changes to, because there's like we're like a lot of states where you can't carry on school property or in courthouses or bars.
Yeah, we are. Right.
But like
we can do bars.
We can do bars if we open carry.
I can conceal carry in a bar. I just can't drink.
Okay. And like you can carry in a restaurant, and you can even be intoxicated as long as you don't have a round in the chamber in South Dakota.
I guess it's harder to have a negligent discharge if there isn't one in the chamber, you know?
They literally changed the definition of a loaded firearm 2 years ago to any round. Loaded firearm is defined as any firearm with a cartridge, shell, or projectile in the chamber, including any chamber in the cylinder of a revolver. So before that, if you had a loaded magazine in the gun and the gun, then that was considered loaded. But I mean, if I was carrying and decided to start drinking, like all I had to do was pop the mag out, clear the chamber, stick the mag in my pocket, unloaded firearm. I'm not breaking the law. But the what was the other thing though? I was going to mention the, like I went to Kansas and Missouri and was looking up their laws. Like if you get busted in those places though, that you're not supposed to have a gun, you're guilty of trespassing if you don't leave when you're told to. And in South Dakota, if you're caught on school property, like boom, done, misdemeanor. Like you've already broken the law. Like there's no chance to leave. Like you've already broken the law. That's the one thing that's I would like to see changed, where it's just like, okay, I go. But the thing is, that's stupid, is my pocket knife. Like the most broken law in the state is carrying a pocket knife on school property. Like everybody and their dog in South Dakota has a pocket knife. Right. And it's the same as a pistol. It would be the same as me walking around with a machine gun if I have a pocket knife in my pocket, like, according to the law. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, but yeah.
Well,
no, and it's a very gun-friendly state.
I do have to clarify, in Virginia, I cannot carry a gun into a school, period. I can leave it locked up in my vehicle in the parking lot.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't do that in South Dakota.
Yeah, that's where they draw the line. Like, if I get out of the car, vehicle with it, and enter, then I am wrong. Now, the trespassing thing is with a private establishment. If they say you can't be in here with a gun, and then they tell you to leave and you don't,
yeah,
then you can be arrested for trespassing.
Yeah.
But we've got a bunch of crazy Democrats because of where we are.
So yeah.
They're always...
You're in Virginia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It went a little downhill with that new governor a couple of years ago, right?
Youngkin, no. He's been good. He's a red governor. But in this past election...
Or was it the legislature that went wonky?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And it just happened. So, like, they've been flooding the governor's office with new gun bills because they're, so he's going to either have to veto them or who knows, but that's a whole other podcast episode.
Yeah.
So, sons of guns. Well, Andy, that's everything that I had. I don't know that there's anything left. Was there anything that you meant to touch on and didn't or want to?
No. I can't think of anything. I'm curious to check my phone though to see if I'm the area director or not.
Check it. We'll find out.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Could be breaking news.
Nothing new. Nothing okay. new. No, looks like nothing new. So
I wonder if they're still going. It's 10:42 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the moment.
Yeah. 9:42 in the Central Time Zone.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's been a great conversation.
I had a good time. Thanks for having me on, Dave.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.